It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered my home.
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and threaten me.
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
And maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
Welcome to episode 807 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, May 7th, 2023. I am the Solo Monster, coming off of a backlash hangover last night. We had a pay-per-view from San Juan, Puerto Rico, and we're going to be talking about that. The backlash fallout, talk about the WWE draft as well, which is now in the books. We will talk about the AEW Wembley on sale this week, which made history, not just for AEW, but just made history in general. So we have a lot of things to get into this week. Thank you for the support, as always. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the link there at the top of the link tree. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. And right now, let's go through our PayPal roll call. I want to thank PB very much. Your generosity is much appreciated. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker, Nayef Alsafar, Big B, Brian Becerra, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. Willie, thank you. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. Road Warrior, Roderick Welch. Very happy to hear your new job is going well. Shin Superkick, Akuma, Killshot, Keith Hart. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Kevin Renfield McCarran, Road Rage, Russell Elton, and the Fighting Artist, AJ Lupo. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate that. Backlash last night in San Juan was another in a long line of strong shows that WWE has put on this year. They're 4-for-4 so far with their pay-per-views. The Royal Rumble, I thought, was great. One of the best endings to a Royal Rumble pay-per-view that you will ever see. Elimination Chamber in Montreal was a lot of fun. This year's WrestleMania, I thought, was the best WrestleMania in years, especially Night 1. Night 1 more so than Night 2. And Backlash was an excellent show that, in front of almost any other crowd, would have been good. It would have been a good show. Not a great show. But last night was a great show. I got every single one of my predictions right. 7 out of 7. So it was a predictable show, but it was a good example of why predictable does not always mean bad. Twitter poll results. Got the Twitter poll up as soon as the show went off the air. As of this morning, with almost 2,600 votes in, 92% thumbs up and just 8% thumbs down for Backlash. It was their first time down there for a pay-per-view since New Year's Revolution in 2005. That was 18 years ago. Hopefully they don't wait another 18 to go back. The San Juan street fight between Bad Bunny and Damian Priest, that stole the show. It was overbooked sports entertainment at its finest. Strong Austin Dude Love vibes from Over the Edge. Only Steve Austin never sold 45 million albums. Judging by his singing of Margaritaville during the invasion angle, I think Bad Bunny's record is safe. But you knew the Judgment Day would get involved. You knew the LWO would get involved. What I was not expecting was to see Carlito and Savio Vega, and for them to blow the roof off the place the way they did. That match was a ton of fun. Bad Bunny wins with a destroyer, and it was the perfect way to close out the show. Only it didn't. And that was the wrong call. But for Damian Priest, that was his WrestleMania. He was the lone member of the Judgment Day to not have a match at WrestleMania this year. And honestly, even if he did, it would not have had half the amount of heat that this match had last night. So he was able to finally get his big moment. That was the biggest match of his career. That and the Raw Women's Championship match that opened the show with Bianca Belair beating Io Sky, those were the two best matches of the night. Those are my two favorite matches. Incredible heat for that match as well. And a breakout performance from Io, who the crowd badly wanted to see win that title. This was the Io Sky that we saw on those NXT TakeOver shows. And the seeds have been planted for a damage control split, thank God, with Bayley and Dakota Kai, they got involved. Bayley arguably cost Io the match, and Io is going to be breaking out on her own very soon, and that's the right call to make. Bianca is now the longest reigning women's champion of the modern era, whatever that means. For the first time that I can remember, we have three champions at the same time, four if you want to include Jade Cargill in AEW, with long title runs that are setting records. You know, Roman Reigns is going to break 1,000 days in a few weeks, and then next month he's going to pass Pedro Morales on the list of champions, only he really isn't. He really isn't, because Pedro was WWE champion for 1,027 days. Roman Reigns has only been WWE champion for 400 days. The 1,000 days is for the Universal title, which he already holds the record for. But because they're unified, what they're doing is they're sort of blending the two together, and they're using the Universal title history by saying, well, he's the champion. This very kind of general, oh, he's the champion. That's not exactly how this is supposed to work. So when they talk about Pedro and Hogan and Bruno, Roman, you know, yes, he's up there as far as, you know, top champions in the company that have held a belt for a long time, but Roman really isn't passing any of them. But that's not going to stop WWE from claiming that he is. So we have Roman Reigns, now we have Bianca with the women's title, and we have Gunther, who is 124 days away from breaking the Honky Tonk Man's record as the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. All of this is happening at the same time, which frankly can make things really boring, unless you have good, credible challengers who can work with these people to keep things interesting. It's slim pickings for Bianca on the SmackDown roster going forward. She's already worked with Asuka. She's already worked with Bayley. And then there's Charlotte Flair. And that's it. And that match should be saved for WrestleMania next year. But what the hell do you do with her in the meantime? You know, unless they rematch her and Io, and Io eventually does win the title from her since they were both drafted to the same show, they could do that. I don't know that they will. But boy, you know, you look at these new rosters, which I'm going to go through here in a few minutes, it is slim pickings for Bianca on that women's side. Rhea Ripley retained her SmackDown Women's Championship over Zelina Vega. Two Raw women wrestling for the SmackDown Women's Championship. That's sort of the draft in a nutshell. That's the WWE draft in a nutshell right there. Look, I don't know very many people who were expecting Vega to walk out, even though they were in Puerto Rico and she got that tremendous ovation. It was a very emotional moment for her. She was in tears during the introduction. She was in tears in the post-match. Even in defeat, she came out a winner last night. That is the highlight of her career so far. That may end up being the highlight of her career. So that was a very special moment for her. And I said this on the stream last night, the best moments, you know, in wrestling are the ones that can really evoke some kind of emotion, whether it's some kind of big crowd pop, or again, it's somebody winning a championship for the first time and they just sort of collapse in the middle of the ring and they're in tears, or they get a big standing ovation when the match was over. I compared the moment that she got when the match was over and that big standing ovation to the moment that Sheamus got in Cardiff when he lost to Gunther. Didn't win the championship, just like she didn't win the championship, even though the people there badly wanted to see him do it. But they paid him respect when the match was over, and you had this, in that case, it was this big stadium with 60-plus thousand people on their feet, you know, giving him a standing ovation out of respect, a show of respect. And that's what Zelina got last night with her family in the front row. So it was a very cool moment. Also, more cracks showing in the foundation of the bloodline. Solo Sikoa and the Usos beating Matt Riddle, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn. Solo winning it for his team makes sense. The match itself I didn't think was anything special. I mean, it was every six-man tag that you'll see on television, minus the picture-in-picture commercial breaks. But the interesting stuff came at the end, with the discourse between Solo and Jey Uso specifically, and Solo almost giving him the Samoan spike, but holding back. Roman Reigns is going to be back on television this Friday, so things will be culminating on SmackDown this Friday. But we have Theory beating Bobby Lashley and Bronson Reed to retain the United States Championship in a triple threat match. That was good for the time they got. It never really got out of first gear, but I thought the work was very good. Bronson Reed was never winning the U.S. title because he's on Monday Night Raw now. And Raw already has the Intercontinental title that they just drafted over to the show. But let me tell you something, that man showed up to work last night. That Vader bomb from the apron to Bobby Lashley on the floor. Lashley standing on the floor. Reed's on the apron. He does a fucking Vader bomb off the middle rope. That was terrifying. That could have ended so badly. Then he's out there. He's moonsaulting off the top rope like he's Vader. But in the end, Lashley spears Reed. Theory sneaks in. He dumps Lashley. He steals the pin. So Theory keeps the U.S. title. And it protects Lashley because he had the match won. Right? The title was within his grasp until Austin Theory stole it from him. He's got bigger goals than the U.S. title. And Michael Cole was saying as much on commentary that Bobby Lashley has said to him that he wants Roman Reigns. Bobby Lashley is the last man to pin Roman Reigns clean in the middle of the ring. Forget the Baron Corbin shit. 5 years ago. That is how long it has been since Roman Reigns took a clean pinfall loss. And he took that loss to Bobby Lashley. Story writes itself. That's the match to do either at Night of Champions or Money in the Bank. And Roman was just added to the list of advertised talent for Money in the Bank. He was not on the list before. Now he is. So that may be why. Seth Rollins, he had a tall task in front of him at Backlash. One-on-one with Omos. They could not be bothered to come up with any real story for these two. They just slapped this together. And so Rollins had his work cut out for him. He pulled out the best match that anybody has yet from Omos. I thought Omos did just fine. Rollins wins with a super stomp off the top rope. He should not have been losing anyway this close to Night of Champions with this whole tournament thing going on. So it was the right outcome. And the match ended up being good for what it was. But again, no story going into it. They went into it cold. They did the best they could with it. Rollins was the perfect person for him to work with. And it was the best match that Omos has had in his entire life. And Cody Rhodes, one-on-one with Brock Lesnar. This was the other half of what they billed as a double main event on this show. This is the match that closed out the show, which it should not have. Cody said on Monday in his promo, he said, if I lose to Brock Lesnar, I go to the back of the line. You can't send Cody Rhodes to the back of the line. Not after losing the way he did at WrestleMania to Roman Reigns. Which, by the way, becomes a bigger, more glaring mistake with each passing day. While the champion sits at home for a month with both belts, Cody shows up every week. He's still getting big reactions. He's going out there. This match with Brock last night should have been a championship match. Instead, it was a situation where Brock beat himself more than Cody beat Brock, even though Cody Rhodes got his hand raised when it was over. And Brock Lesnar now, the way they did that finish, he had Cody in a Kimura lock, and Cody kind of thrust himself forward, and Brock had his shoulders pinned to the mat, all of his own weight coming down on his shoulders, and Cody pinned him. Just like that, out of nowhere. Brock now has an out for saying that, oh, I had Cody beat, and I want a rematch. I was about to break this kid's arm off. I want a rematch. Hey, look at that. An actual explanation for why Brock Lesnar wants to murder Cody Rhodes. See, that wasn't so hard. Brock was a bloody mess in this match. He was bleeding hard way. He went face first into the exposed top turnbuckle. Immediately, you could see the gash. It was right above his left eye. And he was bleeding all over the place. He was wearing the crimson mask. Brandy was watching the show from home. She tweeted, my husband is covered in blood and it's not his. I had a double check to make sure it was Brandy whose Twitter I was reading and not Renee's. She was so excited. I hated the finish. I did not like that finish. I didn't like the match itself much better. I thought it was largely boring and underwhelming, which has become a pattern with most of Brock Lesnar's matches. I feel like I was saying the same thing about the matches that he had recently with Bobby Lashley. So I wasn't a fan of this. Are they going to do a rematch? It sure looks like it. It's certainly set up for at least one more match between these two. I think the rematch happens in Saudi Arabia. How do you get there? Well, you got this world title tournament that I'm going to be addressing here in a sec. You got this tournament kicking off on Raw tomorrow night. And I don't think Cody should have anything to do with this, but they may feel he has to. Otherwise, it just further diminishes this new championship if Cody is basically ignoring it. given that he's the biggest star they have on Monday Night Raw. He's the number one babyface on the show, right? It's him and Seth, basically. So I'm looking at this, and without knowing who's in the tournament, I keep checking because supposedly they're going to be announcing, or I could have sworn they said that they were going to be announcing the names of the people who are in these triple threat matches starting tomorrow. So if I see that they announce it, I'll try to break in here, but they may not announce it until I'm done. But without knowing who's in it, I would imagine Cody probably ends up in the match. You know, Brock was the one who was all bloody when the match was over. Cody did not come out of the match worse for wear. So I thought maybe they would do something where Cody, even if he wins, or if they do some sort of, you know, no contest, Brock just beats him so badly that Cody is not even on the show tomorrow, that Cody is not medically cleared, and that's how they can get out of having him in the tournament. But Cody won, and he looked fine. You know, he walked out on his own 2 feet when the match was over, so I guess, you know, pretty good chance he'll end up in this tournament. And the likely scenario is Brock Lesnar. I can't imagine him working on television, but him costing Cody, you know, him coming out and laying him out with an F5 and costing Cody the chance to go to Night of Champions would seem like a logical WWE way of doing this, and that will then get you to a rematch between the two, because otherwise, there's no need for one. If you think about it, Cody already beat him. Brock can say whatever he wants. Cody already won. There has to be some sort of impetus there for Cody to even accept a rematch between the two. But as far as this, the World Heavyweight title and everything, again, Cody shouldn't have anything to do with that. Cody's path is clear. Money in the bank, and then announce that I'm going to cash in at SummerSlam on Roman Reigns, and that is the championship match that you do at SummerSlam. Stay the course and finish the story at SummerSlam. It's very simple. So let's talk about this WWE draft. The draft has come and gone. Triple H, before the draft even started, weeks ago, said that the draft would shake WWE to its core. It would be groundbreaking. I'm still waiting for the ground to break. Looks pretty stable to me. As with most of their past drafts, they did not rebuild the house so much as they rearranged the furniture. The women's champions, they swapped brands. So the Raw women's title is now on SmackDown, and the SmackDown women's title is now on Raw. And I know people are calling for them to rename the belts, and that would be a fine idea, except for the fact that you still have a red belt and a blue belt. So either way, we're looking at a belt swap here. The Intercontinental title moved to Raw, which meant the U.S. title goes to SmackDown. Despite all the teases of factions and tag teams potentially being broken up, they kept them all together. Which is not a bad thing when it comes to the factions, at least, because the only one I thought should be broken up was Damage Control. I'm glad they kept the Bloodline together, and the Judgment Day, and Imperium, and the LWO. They called up a bunch of names from NXT, which was needed, but it was a missed opportunity drafting them all so late in the later rounds, instead of having one or two maybe in the early rounds, to really put them over as being a big deal, that they would be drafted that early. They didn't do that. They drafted the NXT Women's Tag Team Champions to SmackDown, and they had a chance to take the titles off of them on Tuesday. They didn't do that. So now we have two sets of women's tag team belts on the main roster when there's barely a need for one. We have free agents that went undrafted for reasons that were never explained. They announced a tournament to crown a new brand-specific champion on Raw, but they're including members of the SmackDown roster. I'll talk more about that stupidity later. Superstars can be transferred, we were told, between brands, but they never bothered to explain why or how any of this is going to work. If there's trades, for example, who manages these trades? Because they have no brand-specific general managers. All they have is Adam Pearce. Natalya, she was drafted to Raw, but she went on a podcast days later and said, well, that doesn't mean that I can't show up on SmackDown. Maybe if she wins the women's tag team title, she can appear on both shows, but actually, that's exactly what the point of a brand split is supposed to be. If you go through the exercise of a draft, you are supposed to be exclusive to one show. So in the end, they reshuffle the deck, but they're playing the same card game they've been playing for years. Despite all the hype and the hyperbole by Triple H, this draft was no different than any other draft that they have ever done. And if anything, they played it a lot safer this year than they have in the past. So let's take a look at the new rosters. They go into effect officially tomorrow. Let's start with Monday Night Raw. We have Cody Rhodes, the top babyface on Monday Night Raw. They have drafted him away from Roman Reigns, which is why when I talk about him winning Money in the Bank, the reason I talk about that is because it is the only path now that he has to challenging Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. Otherwise, he has to win the Royal Rumble 2 years in a row and then maybe challenge Roman at WrestleMania next year and make us wait another year to get the rematch between the two of them. Now, he wins Money in the Bank. That gives him the tool to be able to challenge Roman on the other brand for the championship. Seth Rollins is on Monday Night Raw. Him and Becky Lynch both. Where one goes, you knew the other would go. Rollins automatically is the front runner for the new World Heavyweight Championship that they are debuting on Raw very soon. And Drew McIntyre was the other big name that was drafted. He goes from SmackDown to Raw. And I do have an update on Drew McIntyre. This comes per Fightful this weekend. There's been a lot of talk about Drew McIntyre's status. He has not been seen on television since WrestleMania. And then he blacked out part of his social media images, and it got a lot of people talking. Also because there has been chatter about his contract status, that he has been in the middle of negotiations, early negotiations, because his contract is not up for a little while longer, with WWE, and supposedly the two sides are far apart on money. And there are issues that have to be worked out. So the update is this. Drew's WWE deal is up in early 2024. So before WrestleMania next year, but he still has almost a year left on his deal. It's not like it's going to be up in the next few months. It's not like it's going to be up soon enough where if he left, he could be at Wembley Stadium for the AEW show. That's not going to happen. His deal is up early next year. While he operated on the possibility that it could end up being his final WrestleMania, and it's been reported in some places that he's leaning towards not staying with WWE, Fightful says that they've been told it's more accurate to say that he just doesn't know yet. He does not know what he wants to do. McIntyre has been working banged up, but he was adamant that he wanted to get through WrestleMania because he wanted to work with Sheamus. He wanted to work with Gunther. He was bound and determined to do it. And he took a beating in that match too. All three of those guys did. And they had a tremendous match. And as far as the draft is concerned, Drew, he was left out of the loop until it was announced that he was moving to Raw. Nobody told him anything. There have been several perceived miscommunications between Drew and the company over the past couple of years. Sapp did not go into what those miscommunications were. There have been pitches for McIntyre to eventually come back as a heel. However, he has been adamant about not making dramatic changes unless it creatively makes sense to do so. There aren't many top heels on the men's side of this new Raw roster right now, so I think Drew going heel would make sense. But I can't fault him for being hesitant to make any big changes to his character unless they make sense. He has every right to be protective of what they want to do with him. Talent that Fightful spoke to, they're not sure exactly how the new WWE deal with Endeavor may be affecting McIntyre's contract negotiations. And that's an important point to make, because if these earlier reports about them being far apart on money are accurate, how much of that has to do with the fact that this deal is about to go through later this year, and Endeavor is going to, you know, own WWE? It's going to be under the Endeavor umbrella, and certainly there's been a lot of talk over the years about UFC fighter pay. But I think that was always a discussion point even before Endeavor bought UFC. But it's a fair question. How is this deal going to affect future contract negotiations when it comes for renewing talent deals and signing new talent? We went through a period here with WWE in the last 5 years, maybe not 5 years, but like the last 3 or 4 years, as AEW got bigger and more prominent, where there was a bidding war. Whether WWE would want to admit it or not, they were throwing money at guys who, frankly, I mean, some of the figures that we heard, even for people like Anderson and Gallows and, you know, FTR before they really blew up in AEW, I mean, we were hearing dollar amounts that if they were accurate, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, good for them if they can get that kind of money, but it just went to show you the WWE was just willing to throw money at people to stop them from going to work for Tony Khan. And there were a lot of guys who made out like bandits. Randy Orton was playing both sides against each other. He was never going to go to AEW, but it was sort of being played up there. And when he signed his last deal, he basically thanked AEW because it's smart. You know, you play up the fact that, hey, there's this alternative now. Maybe I'll go there. And I'm sure he got a nice big pay raise for it. How much of that is going to happen anymore? That may not be the case going forward. You know, it may be a whole new world now where you're not going to be able to make as much money when you sign that new deal as you would have 3 years ago or 4 years ago. So how much of that is factoring into this talking point about Drew and the company being far apart on money? That could definitely play a factor in the final decision that he makes. I still feel, my gut tells me, he's still staying put. I still don't see him leaving the company, but it sounds a lot more likely today than it sounded to me a week ago, that this could very well happen. I still say he stays put when all is said and done. But there's a lot of time between now and early 2024. A lot can happen. All three members of Imperium moved to Raw, including Gunther, who brings the Intercontinental Championship with him. He is absolutely a main event caliber heel. They just don't have him in main events yet. So when you look at the pecking order on the Raw roster, it's Cody, it's Seth, and it's Drew as the top star, like main event level stars. Gunther should be in that category. He just hasn't been positioned there just yet. Had they done the right thing and given the Intercontinental title to Sheamus at WrestleMania, then Gunther would have been right up there with Rollins, I think, as a top pick to win that World Heavyweight Championship. But as long as he's got the IC title, and they probably want him to break the Honky Tonk Man's record, which is still months away, it's hard for me to envision him being, you know, in that mix. I mean, he may be, again, one of the people in these triple threats on television. He may be kind of in the running for it, but we're not going to see him at the very top of the card, I think, so long as he has that title. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they are now on Raw as the undisputed tag team champions. Matt Riddle, Shinsuke Nakamura, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Dominic Mysterio, Bronson Reed, The Miz, Johnny Gargano, Dexter Lumis, Riddick Moss, Akira Tozawa, Apollo Crews is back, JD McDonagh from NXT comes to Raw, and Odyssey Jones from NXT as well. So you look at all those names, it makes up a solid mid-card on Monday nights. On the tag team side, besides Owens and Zayn, Raw has Ricochet and Braun Strowman, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, Alpha Academy, Fabian Aichner and Ludwig Kaiser from Imperium, or I'm sorry, Giovanni Vinci and Ludwig Kaiser, the Viking Raiders, Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo, the Maximum Male Models, and Veer and Sangha from NXT, who are coming over to Raw with Jinder Mahal, all three members of Indushare. On the women's side, we have Rhea Ripley, who is the SmackDown Women's Champion, Becky Lynch, Trish Stratus, both drafted to Raw, Indy Hartwell, the now former NXT Women's Champion, who vacated her title on Tuesday, Candice LeRae, Dana Brooke, Tegan Knox, Emma, Natalya, Nikki Cross, Piper Niven, Zoe Stark, and Xia Li. And then as far as women's tag teams, Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan are on Raw, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green, and Caden Carter and Katana Chance. The women's roster on the Raw side has just been bulked up tremendously because you could even take any of those tag teams and at any given moment, Liv Morgan can wrestle single, Raquel, Ronda, Shayna, Sonya. So you take those ladies with the already existing Rhea Ripley, Becky. Trish is not going to be around for anything beyond the feud with Becky, so I don't even count her. But again, Indy and Candice and Piper and Zoe, they have a pretty strong roster now of women on the Raw side. And then we look at SmackDown. SmackDown has the entire Bloodline, which has been the primary focus of that show now for almost 3 years. Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman, Solo Sikoa, and the Usos, all on SmackDown. AJ Styles and the entire OC. Bobby Lashley, Edge, Sheamus, All three brawling brutes are being kept together. And Rey Mysterio, along with all the members of the LWO. Austin Theory brings the U.S. title to SmackDown with him after they lost the IC title. Karrion Kross and Scarlett, L.A. Knight, who, I mean, look, again, the reactions that he's been getting, slow and steady, I guess, but hopefully he's going to get a sizable push post-draft. Hopefully he'll be one of the beneficiaries of this shakeup. Rick Boogs, Grayson Waller from NXT, and Cameron Grimes from NXT, who's actually going to have his first match on TV this Friday against Baron Corbin. On the tag team side, we have the Usos, we have the Street Profits, Ridge Holland and Butch, Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, Death Row, and Pretty Deadly from NXT. On the women's side, we have the Raw Women's Champion for now, Bianca Belair. We have Charlotte Flair, Asuka, Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky of Damage Control, Zelina Vega, Mia Yim, Shotzi, Lacey Evans, and Tamina. We have Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, the NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. Alba and Isla and Damage Control are the only two women's teams on the entire show. And what I would do is unify both sets of women's tag belts and just have one set of champions who can defend on Raw, they can defend on SmackDown, and they can defend in NXT. That would be the best solution. There were no announcers swapped. They did swap ring announcers with Samantha Irvin moving to Raw, likely to keep her and Ricochet together since they're a couple. I don't think they broke up any couples. And Mike Rome is moving to SmackDown. So that means no more Samantha Irvin introductions for Roman Reigns, but it does mean that she will still be able to announce Gunther and Imperium. So that's a plus. Then we have a free agent list. And the free agent list of talent, which is talent that can pretty much go anywhere, includes Bad Bunny, who they announced this morning on The Bump, is a free agent. Brock Lesnar, who is eligible to be drafted on night two, and then they told us at the beginning of Raw on Monday that earlier today he renegotiated his deal so that he can show up anywhere he wants. Which has basically been the Brock Lesnar deal for the last 12 years. Or 11 years. I don't know why that's any different now. Baron Corbin, Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin, Dolph Ziggler, Mustafa Ali, Elias, Omos with MVP. Von Wagner from NXT is now a free agent. And Zion Quinn. From NXT, who, you know, he's got a cool look, but Zion Quinn don't do nothing for me. And from what I have seen of, what little I have seen of Zion Quinn, because Zion Quinn has not even been featured on the actual main NXT show. Maybe he's been on Level Up, but Zion Quinn was getting a little push there for a while last year, and then he disappeared. I don't know if he got hurt, or they just pulled him because they felt like, all right, he's not ready yet to be on TV. He has not been on the main NXT show very much. And then all of a sudden, he's a free agent. Now, not drafted or even mentioned due to injury or inactivity is this list of talent. It's topped by Randy Orton. We don't know when Randy Orton is going to be back. I have every expectation that we will see Randy Orton back in the ring this year. But we don't know when. It would make sense, though, for him to spend most of his time on Raw, because you have Matt Riddle on that show. You can reunite RK-Bro for a little while, or you can put the two of them back together and just build to one turning on the other, right? Likely Orton turning on Riddle. But it also makes sense to have Randy Orton in the mix for that New World Heavyweight title. Logan Paul, not drafted or mentioned. He can just, you know, go wherever he's needed. They want him to feud with somebody like Edge on SmackDown or something, then he can go to SmackDown. If they want him feuding with someone like Drew McIntyre on Raw, he can go to Raw. Bray Wyatt, not mentioned anywhere in this draft. Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss both, not mentioned in this draft. I would think where one goes, the other is likely to go. But I don't know what the status is as far as Bray. I mean, again, they've been very quiet and tight-lipped about it. There's been murmurs about some sort of illness, and it's not a physical injury. I don't know what the deal is. It's obviously something physical. We don't know what. We don't know how close he is to making a comeback. Big E, also not mentioned. We don't even know if Big E will ever be back in the ring. He's doing other things right now. He's doing other television shows. I saw he was just announced for something. He's keeping very busy, and I hope he's doing well, and he's living a wonderful life. But I don't want to see him back in the ring unless, you know, he gets the okay from the doctors that say, okay, you can get back in the ring without, you know, being worried about getting paralyzed with a simple bump. So that's the update on Big E. Tommaso Ciampa was not mentioned as well. He's still recovering from his injury. I think he should absolutely be on the Monday Night Raw roster. That puts him on the same roster with Johnny Gargano, and eventually we can get a DIY reunion. Bobby Roode, he is nowhere close to coming back. Probably not until next year. He had a spinal fusion, I think it was late last year, so again, he's not going to be back for a while. R-Truth, who tore his quad, also nowhere close to coming back. Yeah, I know he had a second surgery a few months ago because there was some sort of complication or infection or something, so... And it's tough because Roode and R-Truth are in the same boat here, where R-Truth, I think, is almost 50. And Bobby Roode also is in his late 40s. So when you suffer injuries like this, you have a spinal fusion surgery, or you tear a quad or an ACL or something, the older you are, you're in your mid-40s, late 40s, it's going to take longer, you know, for you to recover. So I don't expect to see either one of them back on TV for a while. Aaliyah, still around. I think she even tweeted her frustration the other day about not being used, but no mention of her. And Carmella was not mentioned in this draft either. And Carmella announced, there's good reason for it, because Carmella announced this week that she is pregnant. And she and Corey Graves are expecting their first child together in November. This is after she suffered a miscarriage in September, and then a month after that, she had what's called an ectopic pregnancy, where there's a fertilized egg, it ends up outside the uterus, and it can't survive. And it can actually be life-threatening for the woman. And that's a horrible thing to go through back-to-back like that, just traumatic. So I'm very happy for the two of them, I hope everything goes smoothly this time. But that would explain why she disappeared so suddenly when they had just put her and Chelsea Green together as a tag team. And Sonya Deville has since taken her spot. WWE held a Backlash press conference on Friday with Triple H explaining how this tournament, which isn't really a tournament even though they're calling it one, for the new World Heavyweight title is going to work. There are going to be two triple threat matches on Raw tomorrow night, with the winners facing off at the end of the show. There will also be two triple threat matches on SmackDown this Friday, with the winners facing off at the end of the night. The two finalists will then face off at Night of Champions in Saudi Arabia to crown a new World Heavyweight Champion. Roman Reigns is not allowed to participate, nor should he be allowed to participate. The whole reason they're even in this mess in the first place is because they unified the titles and they refused to take them off of him. Why should he be allowed to fight for a third one? That would be about as dumb as including SmackDown talent in a tournament for a brand-exclusive Raw championship. Presumably, if a SmackDown talent were to win the title, they would be transferred to Monday Night Raw, but that isn't even the point. They have a brand split. They just held a 5-hour draft over the course of 2 nights to create a new set of brand-specific rosters and a new title that is exclusive to Monday Night Raw. Those new rosters go into effect tomorrow night. That is the same night that this tournament happens to be kicking off. Now, had they announced the participants prior to the draft, or if they held off on the draft until after the tournament already started, then I can understand. But the idea of SmackDown talent being permitted into a tournament for a Raw exclusive belt is stupid. And when I talk about them not taking the brand split seriously, they didn't even wait for the new rosters to take effect before proving me right. They prove my point. Just looking at the Raw roster alone, they have plenty of talent to fill an actual 8-man tournament if they wanted to do one. This is not an issue of, well, they have to include SmackDown, because Raw doesn't have enough talent. They don't have enough named talent to do a tournament. Two triple threat matches is not really a tournament. But Cody Rhodes, again, really should not have anything to do with any of this. And Drew McIntyre is probably not ready to come back yet. I don't think we're going to see him tomorrow night. But they have Seth Rollins, who has to be the front runner. They have Gunther. They have Kevin Owens. They have Sami Zayn. Finn Balor. Damian Priest. Matt Riddle. They have Shinsuke Nakamura. Bronson Reed. The Miz. You mean to tell me you can't get a few weeks worth of television out of tournament matches involving those men? SmackDown has to be involved. You keep Cody out of it because Cody's story is not the World Heavyweight title. His story is with Roman Reigns. He should not be fighting for second place. But after what happened last night at Backlash, I could see Brock Lesnar costing him a win tomorrow night and bouncing him from the tournament. And then they kind of go off and they have their rematch at Night of Champions. Speaking of champions, former UFC featherweight and lightweight champion, Conor McGregor, was on social media this week teasing a possible match with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam in Detroit. This goes back to last month when the WWE deal with Endeavor and UFC was first announced. Paul Heyman really is the one who instigated this. He called Conor McGregor a Roman Reigns wannabe. And McGregor responded by saying that he would break Heyman's jaw in three places. Heyman gave an interview to Ariel Helwani, and he had this to say about Conor McGregor. He said, "I'm not a grandfather, but I appreciate the fact that I'm old enough to be one. Number one, and I am still thriving on top. I would like to see if Conor McGregor, at 57, is still thriving at the very top of his entire industry. We'll see if he's even relevant at 57. We'll see if he even lives to 57 with his lifestyle now. Number two. Number three, it's not that he tweeted to me. I picked the fight with him. Let's be honest about this. He, as a Roman Reigns wannabe, did the Paul Heyman style, you know, title on each shoulder and, you know, gave a shout out to himself. Of course he did. You know, the ultimate self-promoter in Conor McGregor, standing 9 feet tall and weighing 155 pounds at 5'4". So with that in mind, I said, look at Conor McGregor, a Roman Reigns wannabe. And of course, he said, oh, be careful, Grandpa, I'll break your jaw in three places. He's talking a good game, but he isn't coming after the wise man, and even if he did come after the wise man, what if I landed a lucky shot like the lucky shot he hit Aldo with? Jose Aldo clipped him and busted him open on a knockout punch that he threw. What if I had a lucky punch on Conor McGregor? What if I did? If he beats me up, who cares? I'm a 57-year-old wise man. I'm a Jew boy from the Bronx. This is a tough fight for Conor McGregor. I don't see him picking a fight with Roman Reigns, but then again, listen, you know, little people do what little minds tell them to do. And that's okay because I like the little guy. He's funny to me, like a clown. He's here for my amusement. So this week, McGregor went on a tweeting binge, all of which has since been deleted, calling Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman wannabes, saying that there's only one champ, because McGregor is the first fighter to ever hold two titles in the UFC at the same time. He said he's going to suplex Paul Heyman on sight when he sees him. And then he said, SummerSlam, I'll pull in on the yacht, Roman and Paul out the bus. Now, this is some fans wondering if there's already a deal in place to bring McGregor into headline SummerSlam with Roman Reigns at Ford Field. It reads to me more like he wants to fight Paul Heyman than Roman Reigns. Book it. Book it. Have Heyman begging off the entire time until Brock Lesnar makes the save, and it gives Conor an F5, and then they can segue into Lesnar against McGregor. There you go. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Conor McGregor and Roman Reigns, they are not wrestling at SummerSlam. You can never discount the possibility of it happening at all after, I mean, look, Roman wrestled Logan Paul in Saudi Arabia, right? And you got WWE and UFC merging soon under Endeavor. That's going to make synergy between the two companies a lot more likely. But I don't read this as anything more than just playful banter and Conor doing what Conor does best, which is talk shit. He has made a career out of it. He has made millions doing it. If it happens, it won't be at SummerSlam. It probably would more likely be in Saudi Arabia. SummerSlam should be Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes. You want to do Roman Reigns and Conor McGregor as an attraction after Roman drops the titles? That's fine. But the championship should be reserved for your own talent. And that includes Dwayne Johnson, by the way. Not that I think that match is ever going to happen at this point, but if it ever did, it should not be for the championship because it doesn't have to be. It is a major attraction on its own. But on a side note, WrestleVotes told Give Me Sport, and this will be the final time that WrestleVotes gives any news to Give Me Sport after what came out this week about Louis Dangor, their lead WWE writer. Some women came out alleging that he's a predator. I'll spare you the gory details, but it's pretty creepy stuff. So right after it broke, WrestleVotes put out a statement that, after discussions with Give Me Sport, at this time we have decided to indefinitely pause our exclusive features partnership. I do not personally know Louis, nor condone any actions that have been reported. Young Louis has been radio silent since all of this came out. But WrestleVotes said that Vince McMahon suggested several opponents for Roman Reigns as his next challenger at Night of Champions, some of which the creative team scoffed at. It didn't make any sense. Vince McMahon not making sense? The hell you say? I don't believe it. You know that Omos was one of those suggestions. You just know it. You know it. You know for a fact that he wanted Omos in that spot. Or Brock. I can picture the writing team trying to tell him Brock can't challenge for the title. And him just having no recollection of this whatsoever. Or not caring. You know, he just wants to do another Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar match. So I don't know what these suggestions were beyond that Vince McMahon would have made. And we still don't know who Roman Reigns is wrestling at Night of Champions. It may end up being somebody who just has us scratching our head. We'll have to wait and see. But it looks like that's going to be the last WrestleVotes exclusive that Give Me Sport gets for a while. I got a follow-up to a story that I first talked about on The Sound Off, episode 784 last year, when I talked about WrestleMania possibly coming to Tennessee for the first time in 2027. There was talk at the time of the city getting a verbal commitment from WWE to host WrestleMania that year, with the provision that their proposed new stadium be built within the next 5 years. And if that happened, then they would get WrestleMania. And they started talking after WWE ran Nissan Stadium in Nashville for SummerSlam. I guess that would have been... Was that last year? Was it last year? I think it was, right? Because they were in Vegas, I think, the year before. So I guess that would have been last year. So they started talking after that. And it was a proposal to build a $2 billion enclosed stadium that was to be voted on by the city council. Well, last month, the city council gave the final approval to the Tennessee Titans' plans to build that new stadium. And they plan to break ground next year and have it completed in 2027. It would have to be early in the year if they want to run WrestleMania there in April. I mean, that's cutting it a little close. The president and CEO of the Titans was on 104.5 radio, The Zone, on Friday afternoon. And in talking about this new stadium, he said, WrestleMania is not hypothetical. WrestleMania has already committed to 2027. And if everything goes according to plan, he says, WrestleMania could be the first ever event held in that new stadium. It'd be just like SummerSlam was the first event ever held in the United Center in Chicago back in 94. So that would be WrestleMania 43 in Music City if that happens. As I pointed out when I first talked about this, though, a verbal commitment is one thing. Something signed on paper is entirely different. The Minnesota Vikings were talking about their new billion-dollar stadium, and they let it slip that WrestleMania was coming. Okay, that was 8 years ago. 8 years later, there still has never been a WrestleMania in Minnesota. So if you live in Nashville, if you want WrestleMania there, there's reason to be hopeful, but I would not believe anything until it's actually announced. The man who stalked and broke into Sonya Deville's home almost 3 years ago will not be stalking her or anybody else for a while. Per the Fox affiliate in Tampa Bay this week, Philip Thomas struck a plea deal with prosecutors that will put him behind bars for the next 15 years. This is the guy who sent her threatening messages on social media for months and sent similar messages to Sonya's friends and family. Sonya didn't know about a lot of them until after he broke into her home in August of 2020, armed with a knife, zip ties, and duct tape with a plan to kidnap her. Surveillance video from her home shows Sonya checking her sliding door after her alarm system was triggered in the middle of the night. In the video, you see her spot Thomas and run away. Then he's seen on video walking into her home. I mean, really scary shit. He thought that she was still upstairs and told police at the time that he planned to hold her hostage until she answered all of his questions. And Thomas admitted that his intention was to take Sonya hostage by spraying her with pepper spray, binding her hands with the zip ties, and wrapping duct tape around her arms to prevent her from fighting back. Mandy Rose was actually home with Sonya at the time this all went down, and this would have been before their match at SummerSlam that was originally announced as Hair versus Hair, which got changed to a Loser Leaves WWE match because Sonya was going to take some time off after the match because of what happened. And I think they also just didn't think it would be a good look for her to get her head shaved and then show up in court to testify. In one of the messages that this psycho sent to Sonya, who did not see this until after the fact, he wrote her a couple of hours before he broke in, telling her, "Hey, look outside, baby. Look outside by your pool. I'm here. I'm going to kill that little bitch you have inside with you." He was referring to Mandy. So he's been sentenced to 15 years in prison, followed by 15 years probation. Sonya responded on Instagram, "Thank you to everyone who has reached out. After almost 3 years, we finally got some closure last week. I am happy and healthy and have amazing people by my side. To say that it's over feels odd, but I am beyond grateful for the support and help that I received over the past 3 years from HCSO, Tampa PD, everybody in the courts, attorneys, friends, security, and so many, many more. I have a lot to say pertaining to the situation, which I feel can help a lot of people in similar situations now that the legalities are over, but for now, thank you." This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Everybody knows about their web browser's incognito mode, but have you ever taken the time to read the fine print when you open it up? It says your activity might still be visible to your employer, to your school, or your internet service provider. That doesn't really sound very incognito to me. If you want to really stop people from seeing the sites that you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Just think of all the times that you have used Wi-Fi at a hotel, at an arena, maybe if you're there for SmackDown or Dynamite, if they have free Wi-Fi, even at your parents' house. Without ExpressVPN, every site you visit can be logged by whoever is running that network. If your privacy is important to you, you don't want other people to know every website that you're on. Even scarier, here in the US, your home internet provider can record your browsing data and then sell that data to advertisers. ExpressVPN is an app that encrypts all of your network data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers so your private online activity stays private. ExpressVPN works on all of your devices also. It's unbelievably easy to use. It's what I like most about it. You tap one button to connect, and just like that, your activity is secure from prying eyes. So stop letting strangers invade your online privacy. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. When AEW announced that they would be running Wembley Stadium this summer, Tony Khan got a lot of flack from people, thinking that he was crazy. Not from everybody, but enough of it that they thought he was going too big for their first show in the UK. He's always wanted to run the UK. He's mentioned Craven Cottage, that would fit about 25,000 people. 20,000 was their all-time attendance record for Arthur Ashe Stadium. And at the time, that was a statement. When they put 20,000 people in that building in New York, that was a statement made that they could come into WWE's backyard and they can pack a big building. Their first show at the new UBS Arena on Long Island actually beat WWE's first show in that same building the first time. It's all about making a statement. Tony Khan wanted to make a statement by running Wembley Stadium. I didn't think 50,000 people was unrealistic, even though they have never run a stadium that big before. Even 40,000 would have been double what they did in Queens. Tickets went on sale on Tuesday for the all-in presale. And that first day alone, AEW sold over 36,000 tickets. Shattered their all-time record with a $4.7 million gate. 32 hours later, they were up to 43,000 tickets sold and a $5.7 million gate. That was still with the general on sale yet to come on Friday. Mike Coppinger, who works for ESPN as a boxing insider, I certainly hope his insider information on boxing is better than his insider information on wrestling is. He tweeted on Tuesday that he was hearing that Wembley is only scaled for 40,000 for AEW. A far cry, he said, from last April when he was at ringside for Tyson Fury's fight and it was packed to the brim with 94,000 people. Tony Khan didn't like that very much and he lashed out. He called him a liar. He said it was a load of crap and that he could tell his agent, Nick Khan, to shove it up his ass. Then he tweeted him again. He said, "You carry the credentials of a credible reporter and you represent the worldwide leader. I'm just curious, who is your source for this and how can a reporter representing ESPN tweet something about a legitimate news story that is so blatantly wrong and easily verified as a falsehood?" That's a valid question. When you have something that is so demonstrably false, he never even bothered to issue a correction on the tweet. So either his source misled him, or, more likely, he was full of shit to begin with. Either way, it was not a good look for him. And it wasn't a good look for Tony either to explode the way that he did. I would have just offered this guy a ticket to the show, since he said he loves the big fight feel at Wembley, to experience it for himself, and I would have left it at that. By the next day, it was clear, anyway, that the building was scaled for a lot more than 40,000. The guy embarrassed himself without Tony Khan having to even go after him. There were a lot of other people who embarrassed themselves on social media this week. A lot of drones who were in full meltdown mode and had a very difficult time coping this week, making all kinds of excuses for why these numbers were not impressive or they weren't even real, right? We heard everything from Tony Khan bought all the tickets himself, to it being mostly scalpers buying the tickets, to them just flat out lying about the numbers, even though Ticketmaster would say otherwise. I guess Ticketmaster is conspiring with AEW. It's part of the conspiracy. I had another person tell me, well, it doesn't matter how many tickets they sell. It's who actually shows up in the stands. I had to do a double take when I saw this tweet. I didn't even know how to respond to that, so I didn't even bother. I don't know if he was implying that 50,000 people would buy tickets and then not show up, or if they would get lost maybe on their way to the stadium and end up at Wembley Arena instead of Wembley Stadium. I mean, the derangement here is real. It is real, and it was on full display. And I have been enjoying the meltdown myself. It's been very entertaining. A month ago, I didn't think 50,000 was such an outlandish number, as a final number for what they would sell. By Thursday night, Tony Khan said they had 50,000 tickets sold. They earmarked 50,000 tickets for the pre-sale. They sold all 50,000 for a $6.5 million gate. By Friday, when tickets went on sale to the general public, they sold over 60,000 tickets for a $7.7 million gate. This from a company that only had its first $1 million gate last year, not even a year ago, for Double or Nothing. 1 year later, they're on their way to a $10 million gate for a show with not a single name or a single match announced 4 months in advance. 4 months out, if they're already nearing $8 million, they're going to break $10 million on a gate for this show. Now, to put that in perspective, the total paid attendance for each night of WrestleMania this year was around 60,000. I know they claimed 80 or whatever they claimed on television. The funniest thing about WrestleMania this year is when they whatever the number was that they announced on the Saturday show, and I think they announced it as a sellout. And I want to say maybe it was a little higher than the number that they announced on the Sunday show, but they... They announced, though, or maybe it was the other way around, but I remember they announced that it was sold out, and then they announced, I think, a number that was higher. I think that's what it was. And then that was sold out. And it's like, well, which is it? Is this number a sellout, or is this number a sellout? It's just, it's the numbers they announce. They do this with WrestleMania every year. I don't know why, because you just look out at WrestleMania, and it's super impressive. But they always exaggerate the numbers. This show is going to beat both nights of WrestleMania as far as paid attendance is concerned. That is, just think about that. That is a crazy thought. Now, yes, they are running a bigger building than SoFi, and WWE has the big elaborate set and everything else, but just the fact that they are going to have a higher paid attendance than WWE had for either night of WrestleMania this year is incredible. This show is going to be not only both nights of WrestleMania, it crushes the largest attendance the WCW ever did, which is the closest thing to a real competitor WWE ever had before AEW came along, was WCW. WCW was fucking beating them and kicking their ass for a few years. And the biggest attendance that they ever did was for the Georgia Dome show with Goldberg against Hollywood Hogan in 98, and AEW has already smoked that. No matter how many tickets they end up selling, this has already been a massive success because this is AEW going into a new market and making a statement. Tony Khan took a risk. That risk has already paid off. This will be the biggest show in AEW history. This is their WrestleMania 3. Now all they need is their own Hogan Andre. Good luck finding that. That's all they need to find now. But that's what this is. This is going to be, you're going to look out, you're going to get that wide crowd shot. And this is going to be their WrestleMania 3. Right now, it doesn't look like it's airing on pay-per-view. Since they already have a pay-per-view airing a week later, they're going to be having All Out, likely in Chicago. So maybe it streams on the new Max service. I mean, that's just a guess on my part. I can't imagine this just airs on television with commercial breaks. I feel like that would be fucking terrible. It's going to air somewhere. But doing pay-per-views back-to-back weeks would be asking a lot of their audience. So that's why I say streaming on that new Max service seems pretty likely to me. This is their first time overseas, and they have already proven that they can be a live event powerhouse. And this is only going to help them when it comes to making international deals. This is what some people don't understand when they're just looking at it from the perspective of just ticket sales for this one show. This has already been a massive success for this company, far beyond just one night in August. Now, if they've already done over 60,000 4 months out without any matches being announced, and if they can load that card up, you know, you got Sting's retirement match. If Sting is hanging it up this year, he won't have a bigger crowd to perform in front of than the one at Wembley. Maybe you do Sting's retirement match. Nigel McGuinness said that if they sell out, he might just have to lace up the boots again. Nigel back in the ring in the UK would be an attraction as well for them to put on that show. If they can convince CM Punk and the Elite to work together, I mean, there's plenty of big things that they could put on this card. There's been talk about Goldberg. Mike Goldberg, you know, sign with AEW and do something. And yeah, you could do that. You could bring Goldberg in this summer and you can build him up for a match at Wembley against Wardlow or someone, right? There's a lot of different things, not to mention bringing in talent from other promotions, Will Ospreay from New Japan, or if they want to bring talent from other promotions as well, not just New Japan, and work together and have them on the show. Plenty of possibilities. They can come up with a few big things. I don't think they're going to get 90,000 plus just because that's max capacity, and however small their stage is going to be, I don't know that they can scale it for 90,000. Maybe they can. But given all that, it's hard to imagine once they start putting a card together that they're not going to get to that 80,000 to 90,000 range. If they already have 70 or almost 70, it's not 70 yet, but they're closing in on that. If they already have that 4 months out, 80 to 90 sounds pretty realistic. And that blows away even the most generous prediction that I could ever come up with. The fact that it's even possible that they might sell out Wembley is one of the greatest wrestling success stories of all time, and they should be very proud of that. The update on the new Saturday Collision show that still has yet to be announced is that the roster split will not be as hard of a split as has been teased, especially with the women, because AEW does not believe there is enough star power on the women's side to do a hard brand split. And they're right. They don't have enough star power for a split. That's where signing someone like a Mercedes would help a lot, but Mercedes alone doesn't give them enough star power to split the women's roster in half. Meltzer in the latest Observer says that CM Punk will be the star on Collision on most weeks, but he will be on Dynamite at times when he is needed. So basically, a WWE brand split. Those with what he calls unresolved issues with Punk would appear on Collision on the weeks that Punk is on Dynamite to avoid any crossover contamination, I guess, between them. And have I said this is a terrible idea? Because this sounds like a terrible idea. There still has not been any progress made between Punk and the Elite. The clock is ticking. We are less than 2 months away. Every week that goes by without getting them together is time wasted. Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast this week reported that AEW Dark and Dark Elevation are both finished for the time being. This is largely due to AEW signing a new deal for that Saturday show. And as part of that deal, AEW content and Ring of Honor would not fall under that because it is technically a different brand. But AEW content will be exclusive to Warner Brothers Discovery properties. YouTube is not a Warner Brothers Discovery property. And that's where Dark and Dark Elevation aired, at least here in this country. That's where Dark and Dark Elevation aired. Neither one of the shows aired this week, nor was there any announcement made about why or what their future may be. That's because they have no future. They are done. Last week, it looked like it was just going to be Dark Elevation that was ending, but, you know, Dark was going to be safe. Evidently, that's not the case. Dark aired 193 episodes dating back to the week after Dynamite debuted. Dark Elevation aired 115 episodes after debuting in March of 2021. And it was, you know, basically fertile ground for a lot of younger talent and independent talent AEW would bring in. Even independent talent that I know. I mean, they had matches on Dark and Dark Elevation. Sometimes I wasn't even aware of it. And then they would have some lower level, you know, or mid-card AEW talent that would be on there as well. And they would stack the shows. I mean, Dark, I know some weeks can be 2 hours long and they've got 15 matches and it's ridiculous. But it was just a place for people to work and show what they can do and maybe catch someone's eye and who knows, you know, what it might lead to. And the banter between Excalibur and Taz was whenever I would tune in, which was rare, but they just sounded like they were having a good time, you know. And we get them on Dynamite every week as well. And you know, I love them together. They're great. But that to me, when I would tune into Dark, is what I usually found the most fun. Was the banter between the two of them. I know Paul White was doing commentary on Dark Elevation, so they'll have to find something else for him to do. Meltzer says the plan now for Rampage is to turn the show into what Dark and Dark Elevation used to be and make it a showcase for younger talent. So what NXT is to USA Network is what Rampage will be to TNT. The plan will be to tape Dynamite and Rampage together on Wednesdays. Or, you know, Dynamite is live and then Rampage is taped. Collision would air live and Ring of Honor would be taped with it on Saturdays. Junking the YouTube shows makes sense if they're adding another 2 hours of programming on Saturdays and they're going to keep Rampage. Turning Rampage into Ring of Honor is what would make the most sense, but that's not what TNT wants. You know, they want AEW programming, so that'll be 5 hours of weekly programming or 7 hours if you include ROH. Will Washington, who is part of the Fightful team and hosted the Grapsity podcast, has left Fightful to join the AEW team. Tony Khan made the announcement on Wednesday that Will is the new AEW Wrestling Administration Coordinator, which is a new position that they have created specifically for him. Apparently he's had his eye on him for a while. Working in multiple areas. He'll be working in areas including live events, social media, creative, and PR. Sort of a jack of all trades, it sounds like. Fightful says that he'll be helping with overseeing continuity and aiding in long-term creative, and he'll be working directly under Tony Khan. And that is a good thing, because with Collision coming soon, Tony is going to need as much help as he can get on the creative end, and I don't know Will personally. I've never met him before, but I know who he is. He is said to be a pretty creative guy. I think he'll make a great addition to their team. You know, he's a real fan. Storyline continuity is important. And if he can help with that and he can make sure the talent maybe doesn't get lost in the shuffle, then I can't see how that's anything but a positive. You know, Tony's workload is only getting bigger. The more help he can get, the better. So congrats to Will on the new gig. I watched the Firm deletion match on Rampage from the Hardy compound on Friday night. I actually watched the extended cut on the Bleacher Report website, which is 20 minutes long. And so I didn't have any of the picture-in-picture crap. It was Matt and Jeff Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, and Hook against Ethan Page, Big Bill, Lee Moriarty, and Stokely Hathaway. I cannot believe that this feud with Matt Hardy and Ethan Page has been going on since October. Yeah, I mean, I am all for long-term booking, but that is not the kind of long-term booking I'm looking for. Look, I love the final deletion in Impact. I thought it was very entertaining. And then came the ultimate deletion in WWE with Matt and Bray Wyatt. Not as good as the original, but I still enjoyed it. If you like that stuff, this was done in the same spirit as those. It just felt like a lesser version. I didn't have as much fun with it as I've had in the past. You know, they fought in the woods, they fought in the barn, the Hardy barn, or warehouse, whatever it is that they have there. With less of the supernatural elements. I mean, other than the flying drone that transported them from daylight to nighttime. I guess time travel would be considered a supernatural element. But, you know, Jeff left Itchweed at home. There was no Itchweed. There was no Lake of Reincarnation. We didn't see Ethan Page thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation, which was surprising. I wish they would have left Excalibur and Tony Schiavone out of this. I didn't really think this needed commentary. You know, for parts of this match, they had the commentary over it, which I thought kind of took away from it. Matt's kids tried to run over Stokely at one point with a motorized big wheel. Rebby got physically involved. She hit Stokely with a Twist of Fate. And young Maxell hit a Swanton bomb before Rebby went to go put the kids to bed. Ethan Page was left to fend for himself, 4-1. Matt dropped him with a Twist of Fate. Jeff crushed him with a Swanton to win it for House Hardy. And then Jeff went outside. He shouted to the heavens, "Thank you, God." It was all right. Again, I didn't think it had the charm of the previous ones, but it was fun for what it was.
Hey, it's Chris Van Vliet. Isn't Solomonster awesome? Amazing shows week after week for years and years. Hey, maybe when you're done with this episode, you'll want to check out my podcast called Insight with Chris Van Vliet. I just had Stone Cold Steve Austin on the show. He told me who he thinks takes the best stunner of all time. He also gave me his thoughts on the what chant 22 years later. Yeah, can you believe it's been that long? Some of my other recent guests include The Undertaker, Dolph Ziggler, the hilarious Will Sasso, WWE ring announcer Mike Rome, and Austin Theory, just to name a few. You can find Insight with Chris Van Vliet wherever you're listening to Solomonster Sounds Off right now.
Trinity Fatu appeared on Busted Open Radio this week, the former Naomi from WWE, for the first time since walking out of the company last year, and opened up about why she did so. Trinity, for those who don't know, she just made her debut for Impact Wrestling. She wrestled her first match in a year. There was also a very good reason why she has not wrestled since leaving WWE. But on leaving WWE, she had this to say: "I felt very stagnant and I wasn't happy. Ultimately, I left that day because of the way I was talked to and handled. Everything kind of just broke me that day. It had nothing to do with anything else or anybody else. That was just it. I had to. To go through all the backlash and the negativity and the lies and the rumors, and then to also just kind of feel lost, it broke me. It was probably the lowest I've ever felt in my life. But going through that, it made me reset and face it head on and figure out how to learn from this experience and grow from it and just find myself again in all of it. The doors are open for me everywhere, literally everywhere, but I truly feel that Impact is the best choice for me at this point in my life right now with what I want to do. To just be able to work with the talent there, I feel that it's where I will be happiest and most utilized and really get to grow in the ways that I feel I need to right now on this wrestling journey." She did another interview also this week where she called her leaving WWE a blessing in disguise. When Sasha and Naomi walked out of Monday Night Raw, it was a year ago this month, WWE, they issued a very petty statement apologizing for not being able to deliver our advertised main event that night, even though they would routinely announce matches on their own show a week in advance, or they would announce it on the website the day of, and then they would pull them without any explanation. This was common practice for Vince McMahon, and we never got any apologies from them for that. They did it as often as they brushed their teeth and changed their underwear. Then they had Michael Cole go on television that Friday and talk about how Sasha and Naomi, they disappointed millions of WWE fans all over the world with their unprofessional actions. They threw those two women under the bus. Then they put the bus in reverse and they backed over them. And I remember Wade Keller at the time reporting that in speaking with people in WWE, they were puzzled. The WWE people were puzzled by their actions. They said that it felt like Sasha Banks was overreacting to another day at the office, and that she was the leader, and Naomi just went along with what her partner did. There were people in that company working overtime to bury the two of them in any way that they could. And as I said then, the idea of Naomi just going along with Sasha, you know, oh, she really wanted to stay, but, you know, she felt like she had no other choice. This is her friend. This is her partner. Peer pressure, right? She felt like she had to leave. I mean, yeah, Cameron, Naomi's former tag team partner, was one of those people who planted this idea that Naomi may have been manipulated by Sasha to do what she did. Naomi is a grown-ass woman who can make up her own mind. She was not under the mind control of Sasha Banks. She can make her own decisions. And that, as we now know, is what she did. She had her own issues with the way that she was spoken to and treated on that particular day. She said it was the way that she was talked to and handled that day. That it had nothing to do with anybody else. And I point to you the Twitter thread that somebody posted. This was, I don't remember if it was the night of or the next day, but it was that week when all this shit went down in May of last year. There was a Twitter thread from a Twitter user who was known apparently to be close to Naomi, specifically Naomi. And what that person said, if you remember about the events of that day, it read like Naomi's side of the story without her actually coming out and saying it herself. That they had issues with the way the creative was laid out for that night. They were the tag team champions, the women's tag champs at the time, but if I remember correctly, I think there was going to be some sort of five-way or six-way women's match. Sasha and Naomi were going to be part of it. I think Naomi maybe was going to go over and pin Sasha to win the match. Basically, what they were going to do is they were going to take the women's tag team champions and divide them and have Naomi challenging, I want to say, for the Raw women's title on the next pay-per-view. And Sasha would end up challenging, I believe, Ronda Rousey for the SmackDown women's title. Basically, they were going to use the tag team champions to put over the other women's champions as something for them to do at the next pay-per-view. It may have been Money in the Bank. So that was part of the creative that they laid out for them. So in this Twitter thread, this person said, well, you know, they had a meeting with their boss. The meeting actually went well and he understood their concerns. But then the producers got mad. They got mad that the two of them dared to speak out. Probably because it created more work for them. These producers got angry. They started screaming. Talked about how they allegedly told Sasha and Naomi to fix their attitudes. That's the quote that stands out to me from that whole Twitter thread. That they were told to fix their attitudes. And that's when they made the decision as a team to walk out. That sure sounds even more credible now, a year later, that we hear Naomi in her own words saying that she walked out because of the way she was talked to. Almost like somebody told them to fix their attitudes. And if you remember that, and I read that on this podcast at the time, then this should not come as a surprise. I was very supportive of Sasha and Naomi standing up for themselves and doing what they did. The worst thing I can say about what they did is that they were delusional in thinking that those women's tag team belts meant anything. They didn't. They still don't. But they didn't. And nothing they were ever going to do was going to change that. They alone were not going to bring value to those titles because WWE was never serious about doing anything of note with them. I applaud them for trying and for thinking that they could. They were put together as a makeshift team. They did the best they could with what they were given, but nothing was ever going to change. And they felt like what they were being asked to do on that night didn't make any sense. Of course it didn't. A lot of what they were writing at the time didn't make any sense. I mean, it's one thing as a fan to watch it and be frustrated. It's got to be even worse to be in the trenches there. This is your character. This is what they have you going out on television and doing every single week, knowing that it doesn't make any sense. And it might actually hurt you more than it helps you. Something else that Cameron did was during a virtual signing she did in February, she spilled the beans about Naomi recovering from shoulder surgery. But she did not talk about the nature of the surgery at the time or what the injury was. Now we know. It was a torn labrum. And she says that she worked with that injury her entire last year in WWE. She told Busted Open, "What people don't know, I worked with a torn labrum for over a year. Just wrestled, kept wrestling like that and didn't say anything because you don't want to look weak. You don't want to look like there's a problem. You don't want to be taken off TV. I just wanted to keep working, so I continued to work with a shoulder injury, and that was affecting me. It did not feel good. When I got the time off, the first thing I did was get my shoulder fixed. I had shoulder surgery, so months off like that, not being able to work and just having all of it gone. At one point, I was like, I'm done. I don't think I'll wrestle ever again. Just working through it all myself mentally, having a great support system and seeing the fans be like, oh, we want you back. We want to see you. How are you doing? The support and my family, I got back to where I needed to be. Got through the injury, got through the surgery. All of that was a lot mentally. Also, being off the road after all this time, all that I've ever known for the past 13 or 14 years, that's been my life. Being with my husband every single day, traveling every single day. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting home alone. It was a lot, but I feel like it has made me stronger mentally. Physically, I feel great. Just having that time to really miss wrestling, really miss the business, miss the job, I was like, this ain't it. I can't go out like this. We have to run this back. So now she's all healed up and she's ready to go. She's ready to go after the Knockouts title. Impact has a pretty stacked women's division right now, so she's got some quality talent there to work with. Of all the three brands in WWE coming out of this draft, NXT is the one that got damaged the most. But that's the nature of developmental. You know, people get called up. It gives new faces a chance to get on TV and to, you know, try to make new stars. So the cycle starts all over again now with NXT. On the show on Tuesday, Wesley retained his North American Championship over Drew Gulak in a match that felt like it was only first really getting going when it suddenly ended. Only went about 5 minutes. But it did set up the sight of Tyler Bate when the match was over. He was in Wesley's corner, standing in the ring with him and very clearly eyeing the title over Lee's shoulder when the match was over. Tyler Bate and Wesley, they're both main roster ready talents. But they, yeah, I mean, look, they can't raid everybody from NXT. You got to leave some talent down there, right? They left Bron Breakker down there. So if they're going to keep Tyler Bate down there a little while longer, Tyler Bate against Wesley for the North American title, that's enough to get me excited. Carmelo Hayes was not there this week. This was after Bron Breakker put him through that plywood wall the week before. But Trick Williams was there. He was cutting a promo on Bron. Trick's delivery on promos, I think, can be a little manic for my tastes. You know, he's got the gift of gab, right? He can talk, but sometimes I think he just needs to slow it down a little bit. He outshined Bron, though, on the microphone. And they set up a match between the two of them for the show this Tuesday. They gave Trick a chance to shine on his own, and then they had another segment later in the parking lot, which is a dangerous place to be, where he ran into Apollo Crews, right, who's leaving to go back to Monday Night Raw, and Apollo Crews really put him over and endorsed him. That's the best way to use these main roster guys, is to endorse and put over the younger talent as being something special. Gigi Dolin had a match against JC Jane, and Gigi's little brother Miles was in the crowd watching his sister. Jane got busted open hard way. Brock Lesnar was not the only person to get busted open hard way this week. JC Jane got busted open on the top of her head, and she was bleeding pretty badly. I was surprised they even showed it. The referee didn't even put the gloves on like they usually do. Accidents happen. You know, when they do, I say embrace it, show it. Right? It worked for Becky Lynch when Nia Jax broke her face, right? That iconic image of her in the crowd holding her arms out. Her nose all busted up. I say when it happens, embrace it. Don't hide it. Someone gets color hard way, use it. So they did. This didn't last very long. JC has been the breakout of the two members, I would say, so far, of Toxic Attraction. But honestly, they're both weaker individually than they were together. The sum of their parts made them stronger. And at a time when they could really use more women's tag teams, I mean, SmackDown has two. Two! At a time when they can use more women's tag teams, it still baffles me that they broke up Toxic Attraction before they ever had a chance to get a run on the main roster. Axiom, he had a match with Scripps. And then after the match was over, when he won, he pulled the mask off of Scripps, which gets a big thumbs up from me just for pulling the plug on this stupid gimmick. You know, Reggie, Everyone knows it's Reggie, who's kind of a running joke. Reggie is an athletic guy. Just let him be himself. Get a fresh start. If he gets over, great. It'll be because of his athleticism. It won't be because of some dumb gimmick. And then we had JD McDonagh in his NXT send-off against Dragon Lee in what ended up being a takeover caliber match, easily the best thing on the entire show. This was the best match of the week up until Backlash last night. This was the best match of the week on any wrestling show before last night. They had a barn burner, as they said. I was looking, what word can I come up with here to describe this match? And the word barn burner came to mind. And then it got me thinking. Because they said, like, they had a barn burner, as they say, right? Who is this they that they speak of? I don't know. I guess the farmers who own barns, they're the ones who say it. But it got me curious, like, where did this expression come from? These are the things that cross my mind when I am reviewing NXT. And I start wondering about these questions. And I say, where does this term come from? Do you know that the term barn burner is from a story about a farmer whose barn was infested by rats? And to get rid of the rats, he decided to burn down the entire barn. I don't know how it came to describe an exciting game or a fight or a wrestling match, but that's how it's used. That's what this was. No rats here. The only rats would have been the ones throwing themselves at these two back in the day as they went to the hotel. But no rats here. Noam Dar, he was ringside with his Heritage Cup trophy. He was watching the match. He was watching JD McDonagh because they had a little run-in in the back before the match. There was a momentary distraction late in the match where Dar tried to take a cheap shot. And that led to Dragon Lee giving him a super kick. That distraction led to the finish with McDonagh winning, which surprised me given that he is headed to Raw. You know, he's leaving the territory. Usually when someone is leaving, they have them do the job on the way out. But I think it shows how highly Shawn Michaels thinks of JD McDonagh. So the spot with Dar was a way to sort of protect Dragon Lee, who then went after him as soon as the match was over. McDonagh was a protege of Finn Balor. If there is an open spot in the Judgment Day, McDonagh has a history with him. He would make sense to join. Dani Palmer picked up a win in her NXT debut against Tatum Paxley. Not a great match, but Palmer is very athletic. There was talk that they were about to put her and Sol Ruka together as a tag team. The two of them were already doing skits together on TV as best friends. But then Ruka tore her ACL. She just had surgery, so she's gone. Out the window with another possible women's tag team. We had a backstage segment with Robert Stone sitting down with newly minted main roster free agent Von Wagner, who can appear on Raw or SmackDown now. They were looking through Von's family photo album, because again, he's trying to get Von to open up more, right? And Von is like, okay, I'll let you into my life a little bit more. After all this time, right, he's finally going to start to let Robert Stone into his life, learn a little bit more about him. So they're looking through this photo album, and Von is pointing out photos of his father from SummerSlam. They had a match with the Beverly Brothers and the Natural Disasters. From their Wembley Stadium match at SummerSlam 92. And then they zoomed in on one photo in particular, which was a zoomed out shot of Wembley, packed to the brim. There's no way that wasn't done on purpose. This week of all weeks, that day of all days, no way that wasn't done on purpose. Wembley is going to be packed to the brim again in a few months, although that was the old Wembley from SummerSlam. This is the new Wembley. Stone asked him if he was upset when they lost. And Von pointed out that I wasn't even born yet when they had that match. All of a sudden, Robert Stone noticed a photo of Von as a young child with his head was shaved and he had stitches on his head. And he asked him, Von, what is this? What is this photo? And Von got very angry, got very upset. He said, I don't want to talk about it. It's not important. It's not a big deal. And he was pressing Von to try to open up, and Wagner just stormed off. He said, that's enough opening up for today, and he left. It looked like Wagner in the photo had some sort of you know, medical apparatus on his head. So they're actually starting to add depth to his character right at the moment that he has been drafted away from this show. This is just an odd choice. We had a very odd choice here, but I felt sorry for him looking at those photos. They have me interested. I'd like to know what that was all about, what medical condition he may have had as a child. And, you know, look, if he's going to the main roster, Robert Stone should be coming with him. So maybe this is a storyline that they're starting in NXT, and then these vignettes will feed into his main roster debut. I don't know, because again, he's not attached to either roster. He's not going to Raw or SmackDown specifically. He's a free agent where they can kind of pluck him and use him at any time that they want to use him. That doesn't mean that he's going to the main roster anytime soon. It just means that he's a free agent. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn, they're not free agents. They are now part of the SmackDown roster. They beat Caden Carter and Katana Chance, who are part of the Raw roster, to retain the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. All four women have been drafted, and they have said that they are taking the titles with them. Alba and Isla have said, we're going to take these titles with us, and we're going to defend them across all three brands. There is no need for two sets of women's tag team belts when they barely have a need for the one set that they already have on the main roster. The women's tag team division in NXT is pretty much dead with both of these teams being drafted. You know, again, they were going to put Sol Ruka together with Danny Palmer. They can't do that now because Ruka's out hurt. They had put Kiana James and Fallon Henley together as kind of reluctant tag team partners, and they were the champions for a while. That team now is over. As I said earlier when I was talking about the draft, they need to unify both sets of women's tag team belts and have one set of champions who can defend across all three brands. That is the best solution to this problem. And the show closed with Indy Hartwell in the ring in her walking boot to forfeit the NXT Women's Championship as she has been drafted to Monday Night Raw. NXT lost all of its women's champions. She talked about joining WWE when she was just 23 years old. She had a hope and a dream, and she was a fan of the black and gold NXT. Weren't we all? She said that NXT produced legends like Bayley and Asuka. She said women like that made the NXT Women's Championship one of the top titles in the industry. She said she never thought that she could be a champion until she found The Way. She said she found Johnny and Candice and Austin and Sexy Dexy, which was the only time you'll ever hear me refer to him in that way. She said that she was shocked that her WWE wedding had no interruptions. She said that she was also shocked that she won the championship at Stand and Deliver. She said everybody says they want to be a fighting champion, but not everybody can be. She was dragged into the medical room with a high ankle sprain last week, but she dragged herself back out to the ring saying, hell no. And she talked about defending the title with one leg and then getting drafted to Raw. Starting next week, there's going to be a tournament to crown a new NXT Women's Champion. And that new champion will be crowned at NXT Battleground, which is on May 28th. That's the same night, opposite Double or Nothing. She says she wanted to share a quote that she lives by. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And she kissed the belt and sat it on the ground. And then she joked that she needs to figure out, how am I going to get out of the ring on one leg? And she went to go leave, and Dexter Lumis slid out from under the ring and gave her a thumbs up. And then he got up and he grabbed her and carried his wife to the back as she flashed a thumbs up into the camera. A fitting end to the greatest love story ever told in NXT. Tiffany Stratton suddenly appeared in the ring. She picked up the title belt. Cora Jade came in. They played tug of war with the belt. All of a sudden, all the other women from the roster ran in and a giant brawl broke out to close out the show. I hated that ending. I think they should have just closed with Indy being carried to the back, giving the thumbs up. She didn't have very long with the title, but at least she won it. Her being on Raw with Johnny and Candice and Dexter, it makes sense to keep all of them together if that's the plan. I don't know if that's the plan, but it should be. Keep them all together, even just loosely. You recreate The Way without Austin Theory. At least it gives them something to do. The funniest part of this segment was not something that aired on television. Booker T got caught on a fan's smartphone camera in the crowd scrolling through DoorDash as Indy was giving this heartfelt farewell. This is her farewell speech in NXT. And Booker is sitting there and he's scrolling through his phone looking for what he's going to eat. He got busted. Man's got to eat. On his radio show, Booker admitted to it. He said he nailed the one line that he was given on commentary for the segment. And then he wanted to make sure his meal was ready for him when the show was over. He said he wanted his meal hot and ready to go when he got there. And in case you were wondering, he said that he ordered the chicken parmesan from TGI Fridays. They should try to get Fridays now to sponsor the show. They could have Booker talk about how great their chicken parm is. Every day is Friday when you order from TGI Fridays, right? Shucky ducky quack quack. There you go. They should get in touch with them. Let's get to some mailbag questions then and get the hell out of here. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Let's kick things off here with Dion from Chicago. What do you think of the possibility of someone like Shinsuke Nakamura winning the World Heavyweight Championship? I know Triple H thought highly of him when he brought him from New Japan to NXT, and his match with Sami Zayn at TakeOver Dallas was an instant classic, but his main roster run has been mostly underwhelming. Fans still love his theme song, a la Seth Rollins, and I think he deserves at least one run with Raw's top title. They would have to really build him up, I think, for it. You know, right now he's looked at as a solid mid-card babyface. You know, I don't see him as a world heavyweight champion. He just came back. He was gone for a while. Now is the perfect time, if they want to build him back up. You know, he had a match with Karrion Kross on Friday night. He picked up a win there. He's only first officially debuting on the Raw brand tomorrow night. Build him up a little bit. Do I think he should win the tournament and become world heavyweight champion? It's not what I would do, no. It's Seth Rollins' title, and if Seth is not the first one to get the title, then it should be a heel, and Seth can chase the heel and win the championship from them. Tay from DC. I remember years ago when wrestlers would get injured, WWE would run promo packages showing them training and rehabbing and recovering from injury in anticipation of a return. I don't see that much, if at all, anymore. What happened? And can you remember the last time WWE did this for one of their wrestlers? They literally just did this for Cody Rhodes. They literally just did this for Cody Rhodes before he came back at the Royal Rumble. Devin from Garden City, New York. Now, I wanted to include this question, and actually there were two other people who asked me about this, but I'll go with Devin's question. This was also a very big story this week, and it concerns the writer's strike. And Devin wants to know, with the Writers Guild now officially on strike, what effect, if any, will this have on WWE and AEW? In short, the answer is no. It will not have an effect. For those who haven't been following what's been going on, talks of a new contract broke down on Monday night between the Writers Guild Labor Union and the AMPTP, which is the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. It's a group that it represents all the major studios, NBC Universal, Warner Brothers Discovery, Apple, Disney, Amazon, Netflix, a few others I can't think of. Whenever there are any collective bargaining talks with the unions, as a result of those talks breaking down, the writers are now on strike. And the longer this goes on for, you may start to see the effects when some of your favorite TV shows see their new seasons get delayed. If it goes that long, it could happen. You know, if this only lasts a matter of days or a couple of weeks, I don't think you and I are going to really see any effect as far as that goes. But the longer this drags out for, you're going to start to see things get canceled and delayed, and it sucks. You know, it's already impacting production on some shows like Stranger Things and Yellow Jackets, which I know that because those are two shows that I watch. So I've been keeping track of all the different updates, and I saw those two shows mentioned, and I said, fuck. But, you know, all the late night talk shows, they're in reruns right now. The final episodes of SNL this season, they're not going to air at all. So it's affecting a lot of different things. The last Hollywood strike was 15 years ago. That lasted a total of 4 months. You know, the writers are making less money the more that streaming has exploded, which is one of their main bones of contention. The use of AI, artificial intelligence, that's another sticking point. So think ChatGPT, right? This is the future here. The writers are very worried about that undermining what they do and basically making them replaceable. There was a story just the other day that all of the major studios and all the major streamers are planning to use AI to generate scripts based on books. And then when the strike is over, they'll hire the writers to rewrite and basically kind of tweak and proofread the scripts. Like, touch them up. You can see why the writers would be worried about this. Soon technology is going to make all of us obsolete. The union does not want AI used to create any kind of written material whatsoever, whether it's scripts or anything else. As far as wrestling is concerned, yes, WWE has writers. WWE and AEW, though, are both non-union productions. So they are not affected by what is going on. AEW doesn't even have writers. They have Tony Khan, and they have a few people that he leans on for some creative support. That's it. They don't have writers. But this could end up being a good thing for wrestling. The longer this drags on for, because if Warner Brothers Discovery, let's say, or NBC Universal, if they need new programming, if they need new unscripted programming to plug into their schedules, WWE and AEW could be very valuable to them. They could end up being the beneficiary in all this. 52 weeks a year, you get fresh programming, right? 5 hours from AEW alone. WWE has even more. And they're not going to stop. That machine just keeps going. So the longer this goes on for, all of a sudden, wrestling looks a lot more attractive. We can just plug in wrestling. Remember what happened when COVID, when the whole pandemic started? There was a period there where ESPN, they needed programming. There were no games. So what did they do? They were airing old WrestleManias on ESPN. That's the value that wrestling brings. So, if nothing else, it illustrates to their TV partners in a year where both companies are looking to negotiate new TV rights deals, just how important they can be when something like this happens. So no immediate effect on wrestling, but in the end, it could have a very positive effect on those two companies. And Rabat from Derby, England. Whenever Triple H gets his solo Hall of Fame induction, who should be the one to induct him? He says, my suggestion is Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Terry Taylor, The Rock, or Stephanie McMahon. Well, you left out one name. I'm surprised you left out this name because I think this name would be a possibility. I agree that I think Shawn Michaels or Stephanie would probably, most likely it would be one of those two. But William Regal would be another fine choice. You mentioned Terry Taylor, and that's because Terry Taylor and Triple H have been friends for decades. And I think he kind of helped out Triple H early in his career. Well, William Regal did the same. Their friendship goes back to the mid-90s when they were in WCW together. And Triple H is the one who brought Regal back to the company as a vice president. So I think William Regal would be a fine choice also. But who do I think it'll end up being when that day comes? It'll be Shawn Michaels or it'll be Stephanie. Keep sending in those questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. I want to hear from you guys. Follow me on Twitter as well, @solomonster. And of course, you can subscribe on the YouTube channel. Just type in Solomonster Sounds Off. Ton of content going up there every week, including Sound Off Gamer, new episodes of Sound Off Gamer. The most recent one was over 90 minutes long. So there'll be a brand new one going up in the days to come. And of course, more live streams during the week. There's a big Dynamite on Wednesday. Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley in a steel cage match. So I'll be live for the review on Wednesday night after that show. And the rosters, the new rosters go into effect on Raw and SmackDown. The World Heavyweight Title Tournament commences. I am just checking here as I am speaking in real time just to see if there's any updates on who is in this tournament. And I am not seeing anything, which means as soon as I am done recording and I go to upload, they will make the announcement because that's usually the way this always works. Be well. Stay safe. I will be back with you next Sunday. That is going to be Mother's Day for episode 808 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. And thank you for all of your support this week and every week. It is very much appreciated. I will see you guys back here for more Sound Off next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Vince McMahon was not backstage for SmackDown. Suppose Vince McMahon was at an Eagles concert. I am sure, no doubt, rewriting the song lineup. Joe Walsh can take him on tour with him. They can have Vince go out there and perform Stand Back. Stand Back. Stand Back. to warm up the crowds. I don't care where he is, so long as he is away from these shows. And he is not in the chair. That's all I care about.
The Solomonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Solomonster Sounds Off.